but it's quite a heavy passage, and Micah isn't always the easiest book to get our heads around as we read it, but hopefully things will become a bit clearer as we go through it. I'm afraid I'm not going to be explaining every single name and place that was mentioned in that book, in that chapter, but more talking about the general overview and kind of themes that we see in the book of Micah. And so this morning we start our first series of the year, which is looking at this book. And it's great. A few weeks ago, I preached on our verse for the year from Isaiah chapter 44, verse 3, which is on the screen. You can read that yourself if you like. And as part of that sermon, I shared a really familiar picture to us as a church, which is the image of the watering hole, which is a place in the middle of the wilderness where people can be renewed and refreshed. But on this occasion, I shared a new picture God had given me of the watering hole with many streams and rivers flowing out from it. And I believe God is leading us as a church not just to be static and an attractive place where people can come to receive the refreshing presence of God, but we're called to be actively taking his life-giving presence out into the world around us. And in that sermon, I used the phrase deeper into God and further out into the world, which is something I think God is leading us to do as a church this year, to go deeper into God and further out into the world around us. Micah is a book which is all about God speaking into the wilderness and the issues of the world that he saw around him in Israel at the time. God speaks through the prophet Micah to cast judgment on the people of Israel for the destruction that they have caused in the way that they've been living their lives. He addresses their lifestyles, their treatment of one another, their idol worship, the corruption of the rich and powerful at the expense of others, and various other things as well. As we read this book, it can come across that it is a book of judgment. But this isn't predominantly about God's judgment. This is actually a book of hope. In this book, there are three separate occasions or episodes where God casts judgment on the people of Israel. But each one of these judgments is followed by a message of hope. And these episodes of judgment followed by hope are going to make up our six sermons in this series. So we're going to look at each case of judgment and each case of God's hope as well. These episodes of judgment, I was just repeating what I've already said, so I'm not going to say that again. Micah is a book that is all about God's plan to redeem, restore and save the people and the world that he's created. There are aspects of this book that may not sit very comfortably with us. Even hearing the word judgment might have made some of us feel a little bit uneasy. But as we go through this book, I think it will become clear that God's heart is actually not for judgment and punishment, but for restoration and redemption and a restoring of the relationships that God wants to have with us as his people and with the world that he created. The most famous and most well-known line of the book of Micah is this one, Micah 6 verse 8, which says, "God has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God." The purpose behind us studying this book is to cast light on the injustices of the world that we live in today, to acknowledge the many things that upset and anger both us and God, to even repent on behalf of our society and the world that we live in, and to recognise and live out God's plan of redemption, because each of us has a role to play in building God's kingdom here on earth. I could give loads more background information into the book of Micah, but I've got a really good video clip that's going to do that, and so I'm going to play that now, but I need to switch over the laptop, so it might take a second. And then this video is about 5 minutes long, and so we can watch this, and then I'll just move on to the next bit after that. Let me just switch these over.
The book of the prophet Micah. Micah lived in a small town named Moreshet in the southern kingdom of Judah, about the same time as Isaiah. And both the northern and southern kingdoms of Israel had split long ago, and both had been violating their covenant with the God of Israel. So Micah warned that God would bring the big bad empire of Assyria to take out the northern kingdom and come ravage Jerusalem. And he also warned that after them, Babylon would bring an even greater destruction. Like all the prophets, Micah spoke on God's behalf to accuse Israel. Or as he puts it in chapter 3, I am filled with strength, with the Spirit of God, with justice and power to declare how Israel has rebelled. And so, most of this book explores Micah's accusations and his warnings of God's judgment on Israel. But Micah also had a message of hope that countered these warnings about the restoration God would bring on the other side of his judgment. And if you dive into the book with us, you'll see how this works. So the first two sections of the book develop Micah's accusations and warnings against Israel and its leaders. So part one opens with a poetic description of God appearing over Israel, just like he did at Mount Sinai. There's fire and smoke and earthquake, but he hasn't come to make a covenant this time. He's come to bring his judgment on Israel for over 500 years of rebellion. Micah goes on to name all of these towns and cities in Israel that are the culprits of all of this rebellion. God's coming for them. But why, exactly? So Micah picks a fight with Israel's leaders. He says that they've become wealthy through theft and greed. He alludes to the story of Ahab stealing a family vineyard from Naboth in 1 Kings chapter 21. But also, it's because Israel's prophets are corrupt. They're quite happy to offer promises of God's protection to anyone who can afford to pay them. No, Micah says, God has withdrawn his protection from Israel. In the second section of accusations, Micah describes even more how Israel's leaders and prophets have together committed grave injustice. They run the land through bribery, they bend justice to favor the wealthy, and the poor are deprived of their land, their security, and their hope. And all of this is a violation of the laws of the Torah, which declare it illegal to sell land that belongs to families, even if they're poor. And so we find out that God's judgment is going to take the form of an oppressive nation that comes to take out the northern kingdom and Jerusalem and its temple, which will be reduced to ruins. Now these are very stiff warnings, and they're not the final word. Each of these warning sections is concluded with a striking promise of hope. So first is a poem about how God is like a shepherd who's going to rescue and regather his flock, which is the remnant of his people, and he's going to bring them all back to good pasture and become their king once more. The second warning section is concluded by picking up this image of the ruined Jerusalem temple, and Micah says this won't be permanent. One day God is going to exalt his temple. He's going to fill it with his presence and fill the city with the remnant of his people. And so God's purpose is to make Israel the meeting place of heaven and earth, so that all nations will stream to Jerusalem, where God becomes the king of all the nations, bringing peace to the earth. Now, these two concluding poems of hope, they're very powerful. And the next section of the book actually develops them further in a beautifully designed series of poems that are entirely about the future hope of Israel and the nations. So we learn that after the Assyrian attack, Israel will be conquered and exiled to Babylon. But from there, God will restore his people and bring them back to their land. And then we learn that in the new Jerusalem, a new messianic king from the line of David will come. He'll be born in Bethlehem and then rule in Jerusalem over the restored people of God. Finally, in this messianic kingdom of God, the faithful remnant of God's people will become that blessing among the nations. But at the same time, God will bring his final justice and remove evil from his world. The final section of the book returns to this pattern of warning followed by hope that we saw in the first parts of the book. So Micah exposes again the unjust economic practices of Israel's leaders and how it's destroying the land and its people. And here Micah offers his famous words that summarize what it means for Israel to follow their God. He has told you, O human, what is good and what the Lord requires of you, to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with your God. This is exactly what Israel has not been doing, and so they will come to ruin. However, the book ends with another powerful note of hope. Israel is personified as an individual who's sitting alone in shame and defeat. It's a clear image of Israel's destruction and exile. And this individual is watching for God's mercy, and he begs God to listen and forgive. But why? Why should God listen to and forgive this faithless and rebellious people? Well, the poet offers two reasons. First, he says, because of God's character. Who is a God like you who forgives sin and pardons rebellion? He knows that God's mercy is more powerful than his anger or his judgment. And the second reason is because of God's promises. He says, you will stay true to Jacob and show covenant love to Abraham as you swore so long ago. Now, these are the final words of the book. They're an allusion to God's covenant promises to Abraham and his family all the way back in the book of Genesis, that all nations would find God's blessing through Abraham's family. But to become a blessing to the nations, Israel must first be faithful to their God. And so this explains this back and forth between judgment and hope in the book of Micah. If God's going to bless the nations through Israel, then he must confront and judge the evil among his people. But his judgment is what leads to hope, because God's covenant love and promise are more powerful than human evil, and his ultimate purpose is not to destroy, it's to save and redeem. Or as the concluding lines of the book put it, God delights in covenant love, so he will again show compassion. He will trample our evil. He will toss our sins into the depth of the sea. And that's what the book of Micah is all about.
So that gives us a bit of an overview into the book of Micah. I found that video helpful. You might have to watch it a few times to get everything that's said there. That is also in the small group studies, and so if you're in a small group, you'll be watching that again, which I think will be a helpful thing for you to do.
Put the link in the notices or something.
We can put the link in the notices as well. So now I want to spend a bit of time looking at the first chapter of Micah. So I've given a little bit of the background, but I thought it'd be good to actually get into it and explore a little bit of the first chapter this morning, which begins with Micah introducing himself and explaining that he's from Moresheth, which was a small rural town in southern Israel. Micah wasn't an important man. He didn't have great wealth or status or power. He was a lot like many of the other people that we read about God using in the Bible. And coming from this humble background of a poorer rural community, I think Micah would have understood and even experienced the struggles of the people who were poor in his society and the injustices faced by many people in his society as well. In verse 2, Micah explains the reason he's writing. He says, so that the sovereign Lord may bear witness against all the people of the earth. And as I read this, the image of kind of a court scene comes to mind, with God bearing witness against all the injustices of the world. And this really leads into the first chapter, where Micah begins to speak judgment over the people of Israel. In verses 3 to 7, Micah accuses the people of drunkenness, idolatry, and sexual immorality, amongst other things. The next part of the chapter, from verse 8, is then titled in many Bibles, Weeping and Mourning. And this is Micah's emotional response to what he sees going on in the world around him. And it appears, as we read this, that it's not just a little bit of upset and anger, but it's almost like the very emotions of God are flowing out from him. And it's this part of the passage that I really want us to think about this morning. This section begins in verse 8 with Micah saying, because of this, I will weep and wail. I will go about barefoot and naked. I will howl like a jackal and moan like an owl. In this passage, Micah begins to radically express his upset at the destruction and the sin and the injustice that he sees in the world around him. Can you imagine if I got so upset that I took off my clothes and started leaping around, howling like a jackal and moaning like an owl? Perhaps don't try and imagine that, because I don't think it'd be a very pleasant thought. But this isn't just mild upset. Micah looks at the world around him through the eyes of God, and his response is gut-wrenching anger and pain and upset. And there's a word for this kind of response. It's the word lament. The actual definition of this word is a passionate expression of grief and sorrow. And I think really that's a mild way of describing Micah's response of ripping off all his clothes to the issues of his day. The word lament is used to describe quite a number of different passages in the Bible. In the book of Psalms, there's a whole section of the Psalms known as the Psalms of Lament, where the writer, most of them written by David, is pouring out his pain and grief and sorrow to God for the things that are going on in his life and in the life of the people of Israel. Lament is more than just being a bit sad. Before we go any further, I've got a question that I just want you to discuss with the person next to you. If you were to pick one thing that really upsets you in the world, what would that one thing be? There's a whole load of things you could pick, but what one thing upsets you most in the world, more than anything else? Take a moment just to talk to the person next to you. Injustice. I'm sure there's loads of other things that we mentioned there as well, and things that really upset us. And a few weeks ago I said that I worry about the kind of world that Megan, my daughter's going to grow up in. And sometimes it's easy to see the destruction and pain that is going on in the world around us, and God's hope in that feels quite far away. And I'm sure this was the same for Micah, but Micah found a way of walking through his struggles with God. And I think one of the ways he did this was through this thing of lament. And as I was thinking about Micah's response of ripping off all his clothes and howling like a jackal and moaning like an owl, I thought, how good are we really at lamenting? How good are we at lament? How good are we really at expressing our gut-wrenching sadness and anger to God for the things that are going on in the world around us today? I just want to spend a bit of time thinking about Micah's lament and how it was helpful for him to do that, but also how it can be helpful for us to react to the issues in our world today, perhaps in a similar way, not necessarily taking off all our clothes, but finding a way of expressing our upset and anger in a way, in a better way than we already do, really. And so, first of all, lament recognises a painful reality, and it enables us to express our thoughts and emotions to God. So Micah allows himself to be upset and angry at the issues he sees going on around him, and he doesn't hold back in expressing this to God. I think at times we struggle to respond to the things that upset us in the world. I've had quite a number of conversations with people who find it too hard to watch the news because they just find it too upsetting. But the problem is, if we ignore what's going on in the world around us because we don't want to get upset, it means actually that we're ignoring the problem and not engaging with issues that are really happening. Another way I think that we sometimes respond is to put distance between ourselves and an issue that we see in the world. We make it someone else's issue to deal with because it doesn't directly affect us. So we may think, oh, that's happening in another country, it's their problem. Or we see an issue and we see it and it's so big that we think, how can we really make a difference? Perhaps one of those issues might be stuff to do with climate change and environmental issues. Really, does my little bit of recycling make all that much difference? But we should be engaging with these things. I think we've also become a bit desensitized to all the many things that we hear are going on in the world around us. And rather than responding with upset and anger, we just see it as, oh, that's just another issue, just another natural disaster, just another terrorist attack that's taken place. We are called as God's people to be active and engaged in the world around us. We shouldn't be burying our heads. We should be engaging with the issues of our day. And Micah shows us that the place, a great place to start with that, is lament. He doesn't hold back in expressing his gut-wrenching anger and sadness to God. Lament recognises a painful reality and enables us to express our thoughts and emotions to God. So let's give it a go for a moment. Can one person shout out one of those things that we said that upset them most in the world? Fiona, perhaps you could just say yours again.
Child abuse and abuse of power.
And now, just some of the rest of us, you might want to close our eyes and And on hearing that issue, speak out some of, in prayer, some of your immediate thoughts and feelings to God about child abuse and abuse of power. So as we speak out our upset and anger to God at this issue, God begins to work in and through the pain that we're experiencing. The importance of lament is talked about a lot by a writer called Mark Vrogop in a book called Dark Clouds, Deep Mercy, Discovering the Grace of Lament. And I've got this book if anyone would like to borrow it. And he says this: to cry is human, but to lament is Christian. Every lament is a prayer, a statement of faith. And another writer, a lady called Linda Evans Shepherd, says something similar. She says, a lament is an act of worship, a faithful statement of trust in the face of difficulty. It's a wonderfully honest way to acknowledge our trouble to God, as we also acknowledge our hope in him. By engaging with the issues we see in the world around us and allowing ourselves to lament, we enter into prayer. And in this way, we acknowledge before God both our troubles and our hopes. And this encouragement to lament, I think, also tells us something about God, that God values our honesty and our vulnerability and encourages us to lay everything before him, including our anger and our sadness. So lament recognises our painful reality and enables us to express our thoughts and emotions to God in prayer. Lament also puts us in touch with God's heart for the world around us. Right at the start of this book, Micah is led into this time of lament, and through it he shares the bigger picture of God's heart for the people of Israel. Micah was a prophet. Prophets are people who see the bigger picture of what's going on in the world that perhaps other people don't see. He shares God's vision for the world. Micah recognises where the people of Israel have gone astray, and through this time of lament he's able to see the world from God's perspective and make sense of everything that's happening around him. Sorry, I've got quite a few quotes today. Another writer called Nicholas Walterstorff wrote in a book called Lament for a Son, which is all about his sadness and grief at losing his child, his son. And he says this: I shall look at the world through tears. Perhaps I shall see things that dry-eyed I could not see. Often I think lament is seen as a weakness, and being upset is seen as a weakness. But if we have the courage to engage with the things in the world that cause us pain, then through our tears we may see things that dry-eyed we weren't able to see. I once prayed a prayer that was based on a line from a Christian song which says, "Break my heart for what breaks yours, everything I am for your kingdom's cause." And since praying that prayer, I don't think I've ever quite been the same, and find myself getting far more upset at the things I see going on in the world around me. And it's in lament. I'll wait a second. They escaped. So I prayed that prayer, "Break my heart for what breaks yours, everything I am for your kingdom's cause." And it was a big prayer for me, and it was a prayer that's led to me getting more upset about the things that are going on in the world. And I think in lament, we touch the heartbeat of God, and we begin to see the world from his perspective, as well as from our own perspective as well. We see things through our tears that we may not have seen through dry eyes. And then finally, lament leads us into passionate action. Having embraced this painful reality of what we see around us and expressed our upset to God and understood a clearer sense of God's heart and his vision for the world, I think our natural response is then to act. Micah's period of lament led him to continue prophesying, to write this book that we read, and to speak out against the injustices he saw going on in the world around him, even if that meant speaking out against leaders and powers who may have sought to harm him. His time of lament led him into action. That guy whose book I mentioned earlier uses the Easter story as a way of thinking about how powerful lament can really be. He says the lament of Good Friday was answered 3 days later with the empty tomb. The greatest injustice in history became the greatest display of divine mercy. Tragedy became triumph, and lament was the voice in between. I really like the idea that lament is the voice between tragedy and triumph. Lament is the catalyst for transformation in the world, because having connected with the very heart of God, the only way that we can respond is to act and do something about what we see around us. The question I asked earlier, what upsets you most in the world, was a question that I once heard in a talk that was all about identifying the calling that God has given us in life. And the person speaking said that one way of identifying our calling in life is to engage with this question of what upsets us most in the world. And having heard this talk a couple of years ago, I asked Esther this question of what upsets her most in the world. And her response is, the thing that upsets her most in the world is when she hears about people, particularly girls, in places where they're unable to have an education. That's the thing that upsets her most in the world. And I don't think it's a coincidence that Esther is passionate about education and works in a school as a teacher. The issue that causes her the most upset and sadness and lament is also the issue that God has called her to do something about. Over 3 years ago now, in the summer before Graham and I set up the Renew Wellbeing Cafe, I went through quite a bad time of anxiety for a few months. And this led me to a place of, that I could probably describe as lament, of expressing my anger and upset to God about the struggles that I was facing on a daily basis for a few months at that time. And during this time, Graham and I started the Wellbeing Cafe on a Wednesday afternoon. And I found that my experience of struggle and lament led me into action and wanting to support others who are struggling in a similar way. I'd suggest that all the things that we named earlier as the issues that cause us most upset in the world are either linked to an experience we've had, or a passion we have, or the calling that God has placed on our lives. Through allowing ourselves to lament these upsets, we enter into relationship and conversation with God. We gain an insight into what His heart is for the world. And this leads us to act and to do something about the thing that upsets us most in the world. And this leads us to share God's hope of transformation and restoration and redemption with the world around us. And so I want us to approach this book of Micah as a message of hope to the world today. That whilst we look at the world and see many issues around us, just as Micah did, we need to recognise that there's no situation in the world that God cannot change, that He can't restore or redeem. There's no country or relationship that God can't restore. There's no individual or community that can't be redeemed by the grace and mercy of God. And that is the hope that Micah brings in this book. He expresses his pain. He shares the heart of God. And from that place he speaks and acts to bring about the restoration of God's kingdom in Israel and here on earth as it is in heaven. And so how will we respond to the issues we see in the world around us? Let's not ignore them. Let's not pretend that those issues belong to someone else, that it's not our issue to deal with. Let's engage with them. Let's lament and let's act. And let's do that as a church community, sharing together in the things that upset each of us and working to build God's kingdom here on earth as in heaven.